Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and this is episode 206. And once again, I'm joined by Brenton Johnson. Welcome along, Brenton.
Ah, good to be back, Robert.
So we're back for episode 206. So what's happened since 205, Brenton?
Well, not a lot for me, really. I've been pretty flat out, been to conferences, been looking at WAFs or web application firewalls, and hosting them in Azure or Azure and doing all of that sort of stuff. So that's been really cool. Some really cool products out there. It's amazing how many people have an application that just sits out on the internet. It has nothing in front of it. These sorts of solutions can sit in front of those and automatically patch vulnerabilities on the fly, limit access to areas, do all the sort of stuff, for not that much money, really. We're sort of talking, $3,500 USD or something a year for the software license, and then spin it up in Azure and off you go. That's a starting point. So I thought, that's not too bad. How about yourself, Robert?
Been keeping up with what's happening in the Microsoft world as always, and Microsoft Build was last week. So that's Microsoft's big developer conference. And even though it is around developers, we do get a few new bits and bobs from there that we can look at. So, again, don't know how much you are across that, but we typically have a vision keynote by Satya. Then we have two keynotes, one more on Azure, one on more on Office 365, and then they break down to individual sessions. All of those that most of that I've seen is, again, pre-recorded, so you can watch that on the Microsoft Developer channel, and they're worthwhile having a look at. The only thing that I thought was, I suppose, I understand it, but it was a bit interesting, was the initial demo that they tried with HoloLens. Did you see that at all?
Oh, I didn't see that. I've actually been inside the HoloLens before, Robert. So at the Microsoft Summit, they had one HoloLens for, I think, 40,000 people or how many people went. It was just ridiculous. I managed to get myself in the HoloLens, and I can tell you without a doubt it's the best VR experience I've ever had. It's technically not VR, it's augmented reality, which is different, but I've been in Oculus, I've been in Vive, I've been in the mobile versions of things, I've been in them all, I've tried everything. By far, HoloLens is my favorite. So I said to the guy, where can I go buy one of these? He goes, we do a 50% discount for a dev kit. If you're a developer, I said, that's cool. How much? He's like, $8,000. But I can kind of see how it's worth it. It's the most amazing piece of technology I've ever seen. I could not believe what I was experiencing. It felt like Star Trek. It's something you have to experience. Have you ever been in one, Robert?
Yeah, look, I've got it. I've played. I haven't got one, but I have used one and understand it. I think it's still got a long way to go, but. Again, we're looking and talking about something that's a bit of a vision at this stage, and the idea is to get developers to start writing code and building applications around it. I think there's a big future for, obviously, service-type work. So if you imagine a mechanic who's working on a car and he doesn't know the model or the make or does not real familiar with it, he can bring up the HoloLens and get a schematic of all the electrics, all the mechanics. He can see parts that he can't reach, obviously, in the engine. So, again, it makes a lot of sense in those sort of environments. And, again, we will see it used in many, many places, but it's still very early days. A little bit expensive, but the price is coming down. It's a bit like the Microsoft Hub, obviously the Surface Hub with the big screen that Microsoft has. I mean, they've come down dramatically. They've also got cheap and portable ones now. So, again, someone's got to set the vision and have these items out for developers to get excited about and write code about. So I think augmented reality is probably the way that it's going to go. So again, we get an overlay, a computer overlay on top of the real world to give us additional augmented information. So I think that's the way to go. And it's worthwhile having a look. Typically, if you've got a Microsoft store in your location, they can generally show you, will give you a bit of a play with HoloLens to get a feel for it. So again, worthwhile. But what happened at Build was, is because it's now the 50th year of the moon landing very shortly, they were going to do a whole HoloLens demo and it basically failed. And then the guys just said, oh, you know, thank you very much and walked off stage. And everybody sort of thought it was a bit of a joke or a April Fool's thing. And no, it was a complete demo fail. So they just gave up and walked off the stage. So that was a bit of a not the best way to start Build, I would suggest.
Oh, we remember the old 98 when that happened to Bill Gates. And
plugged in the USB, the USB scanner, I think it was, and a blue screened. And the interesting thing to note is the person that did that at the time is still working for Microsoft. So, again, it goes to show you that just blue screening doesn't necessarily end your career.
That's good to know.
So one of the things that I noticed that I think a lot of people will be excited about or is worthwhile letting people know around Microsoft 365 is that the password length has now been increased to 256 characters. So before it was limited to 16 characters due to backwards compatibility with previous identity management systems and on-prem in some respects, but now it has been extended to 256 characters. So you can now set your user's password or your own password to be something infinitely long to make it a bit more secure. So again, I think this is something that a lot of security-minded people have been at Microsoft for a very long time, and now Microsoft has delivered. So again, that should be rolling out. If you can't do it immediately, then again, you might have to wait a week or two for it to roll out to your tenant, but the ones I've played with certainly have that ability to set up to 256 characters for a password. So I think this is another one of those removing the the negative side or the excuses against something like Azure AD. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Look, one of the big things that's happened recently is that 8-character passwords have become ridiculously simple to crack. To crack a password, what you really want is graphics cards. So it's essentially the same sort of hardware that you would use for Bitcoin mining, which is plenty of old graphics cards playing around out there. You plug a heap of them in, you grab the hash, and you just go through and guess as many passwords as you can. A million a second, you go through common dictionary passwords. There's word lists that you can just get online that tell you. NIST even released one if you want to use theirs, the top 100,000 passwords or something that you can try. And 99% of the time, I don't know if it's that much, but it's pretty common that people just use very basic, easy to break passwords. So the traditional wisdom has been turned on its head and it said, all right, now what we need you to do is not to think of complex passwords, but longer passwords. So you go around, you educate people about correct Torus battery staple, except for Microsoft. Oh, why not Microsoft? Doesn't support it. So all of my password policy is around 16 characters. So every password I have for every site is 16 characters because that's what Microsoft supports. So now I'll be bumping that up. I'll probably have, so I use Password Manager, so all my passwords are unique and 16 is probably fine. 12 and above is probably where you should be aiming at. But trying to come up with a memorable password between 12 and 16 characters is quite a tall order. So when this popped up, I couldn't have been happier. It's one of my real bugbears with Microsoft, particularly because people use it to log into their machines as well. So it's hashed and all of this sort of thing. So you really do want something that's at least 12 characters on Office 365 to really protect yourself. So huge thank you to Microsoft out there. Couldn't be happier.
So, unfortunately, we do have to balance the good with the bad. So, as good as that is and positive that is, unfortunately, Azure AD had another DNS-style outage recently. So, again, Microsoft is not having a good run with DNS of late. So, the last one before this one that was something to do with a third-party provider, but it turns out that in moving their DNS internally or moving it to Azure AD, they mucked up their records or something. So again, this caused an outage for lots and lots of people, both in Azure and Office 365. Luckily for us down here in the South Pacific, it was generally in the, I think, the US time zone. So hopefully it was mostly resolved by the time where people were logging in Australia, but it did cause some angst at the time. And again, I think this is one of the things that unfortunately Microsoft is not getting a good name for at the moment, is the reliability of its identity management system. So fingers crossed that when it does move it across to Azure AD, it will become a lot more reliable. But to their credit, again, they have published the reason that it's happened and the mitigation. And again, with systems this large, when you do get an outage, it will cause, again, a large impact. And you can't test these sort of environments fully because given the scale of it. So anyway, hopefully that's something that Microsoft can address. And going forward, we'll see a bit more reliable, a bit more reliability on the identity for Azure, because I think, again, it's giving Microsoft a bit of a black eye at the moment, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, it seems so simple, getting your DNS records correct. It wasn't that long ago. It was February. The article cites Windows 10 users getting a corruption because of an external DNS provider with the incorrect DNS entries. So it's not that complicated a thing to solve, but when you are at the scale of Microsoft, it's not as simple as just, you know, setting up cPanel and changing or setting up Cloudflare and just adding DNS records. It's a lot more complicated than that. You're migrating across to new systems. You've got changes that come as a result of that. And I would imagine Microsoft is managing thousands of domains. So 2 hours is a long time, but the fact that they'll be able to respond to it, provide, you know, the good thing about Microsoft, it tells you what's going on. They give you information. It's not like it's down and no one knows what's going on and then it just comes back up like some other companies. They are much better at communicating this stuff. So I don't mind these things happening from time to time because it does sort of make sure that they can recover from a disaster. I think there's a silver lining in all of this for all of us.
Well, we should know that any IT is never perfect because it's written by humans and managed by humans. So you're going to get these sort of issues. I think, again, just understanding them and, again, creating a policy or a procedure or a checklist as to, you know, if this thing happens, what process should you follow? Where should you check? Where you're going to get the information from? Because what I find is that when issues do occur, people start running around making all sorts of claims and, you know, not getting the right information or not sharing the right information with people. So I think the trick to it is, you know, where's the best place to look? I would suggest that there is an Azure status and also a Microsoft 365 status on Twitter. They generally are pretty good. And again, they're outside, obviously, the Microsoft environment. So if Microsoft is having problems, they can generally post on Twitter and people will be able to, you know, keep up to date with what's going on. So again, let's keep our fingers crossed that Microsoft can solve this issue. And again, remember that it's handling millions and millions of logins per day to its environment. That's still growing. So again, things of this scale do take a bit of planning and architecting to make sure they're 100% reliable. And again, that's always going to be a challenge in this sort of world. So another positive side, I suppose, let's go back to a positive note, is I don't know what you saw around build around Microsoft Edge, the new Chromium or new Credge browser, as we call it, or whatever its nickname is. But I was very impressed with, obviously, how quickly they've got to market with this product and some of the new features and functionality that they've built into it. So remembering, this is still in dev, so there isn't a beta test you can put on all the environments. So I'm certainly running it on all of my Windows machines with great success. Don't have any problems with it. It runs really, really well. Runs all the plugins. I find it works really well. I've synchronized my information across these browsers. It will be nice if it synchronized using an Azure AD account. But at the moment, the dev one only does the Microsoft account. But I was certainly very impressed with, like I said, what we're seeing with the development cycle of this new Chromium Edge browser. Have you seen anything around this, Brenton? What's your sort of thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I have a few favorites here. So I'll go through some of the stuff they released here. They've got productivity concepts, so you can go around, collect information off the internet. There's a sidebar, you chuck stuff in, and then you can push that into Excel, PowerPoint, wherever you need to push stuff, which is really cool. So if you're a bit of a internet pack rat, like say Robert sometimes is with his codex, this is going to make your life a lot easier, and I can see this being a great sort of integration. We're starting to see that real integration stuff. My favorite part, though, is probably this privacy tools. So they've actually given you three different privacy things, so an unrestricted, a balanced, and a strict. So, you know, unlike Google, who aren't really in the business of privacy, maybe with their G Suite product a little bit, but privacy isn't really part of the DNA of Google. So the web browser, particularly protocols like WebRTC, leak out information, even if you're behind a VPN or something like that, can leak out information about truly who you are. And it's very, very hard to control those privacy controls. So you need to install, you know, I installed about four or five different plugins, you know, uBlock and Privacy Badger and all of these other ones, just to get the web to a place where it's a little bit less invasive in my life and I have a little bit of privacy floating around. So Microsoft's building some of that in, which is, you know, and out of the gates, like it's a priority for them, which, you know, that's something we don't really see except if you use Firefox, I guess.
So I also like the integrated Internet Explorer mode as well. So for those companies that do need to use the older IE for a website or something, or a web thing that they've developed themselves, that will then now work seamlessly inside the new Chromium Edge browser. It'll be interesting to see how this is handled when Microsoft obviously go to push these updates back into the open source community to see what happens there. But again, I must admit, like I said, after running the Edge browser myself and looking at what Microsoft has developed and what is coming down the pipeline, I think it's really on a winner here. Hopefully, finally, fingers crossed that it can have a browser that everybody can use, or that a large percentage of the community can use, and it will fill a need that we have out there. So again, it's good to see, and I'm very positive, and hopefully Microsoft isn't far away from unleashing that in beta for us, because it will run on Windows 7, 8 and Mac. So again, it'll be nice to have that one browser that's linked across everything that is a Microsoft-style browser.
Is it syncing your bookmarks and all of that across all your browsers?
Yep.
History?
It does it. Yep, it does all that. Yep, it does that. But at the moment, it uses the consumer account, so my live account. We haven't got the ability as yet to do our work or Azure AD account, but that is certainly something that will be coming. And that will certainly make life a lot easier to keep everything consistent and sync your browser settings between machines. And also, I will note too, Edge also on Android and I think iOS as well. So again, it'll be nice to have that across the total Microsoft environment. So very, very handy. One of the other things I note that Microsoft is also very big on the moment is this My Analytics. So My Analytics is a service that is in Microsoft 365 that takes the information from the Office graph about your interactions, how many emails you send, who you spend time in meetings with, and so on, and surfaces that in a dashboard that gives you your productivity and, for example, lets you know how many emails you send, who you send them to, what times you send most emails backwards and forwards. So this is coming to all SKUs. So shortly, Microsoft's rolling this out in May, and you'll have a My Analytics personal dashboard, and you'll be able to go in and have a look at that and get some idea of your productivity settings. And I think this will be very good for a lot of people to get an idea of how much time they spend on technology. But I also suggest that it, again, is a differentiation point between Microsoft and some other tools. So I think there's a good little thing. Have you seen it come up in your tenant as yet, Brenton?
Yeah, mine's enabled. I've got to go and be an administrator and enable it. So having a look here. But, you know, it doesn't look pretty, Robert. Like... you know, last thing I want is another email to come in. But when it looks that nice, maybe I can live with that. And if it's
but it comes, you can look at it as a dashboard. It doesn't have to be an email. There is a dashboard you can visit that will give you all the settings that you want.
Will I actually visit it? I don't think I would. Maybe I'd do as a curiosity. I wonder what I'm doing. But I think having the force feeding around the email is quite good. Love to see some goal setting in here. You know, or I don't know how well it's going to track stuff in the future. But if it's all AI powered, I imagine it'd be able to read your email and see what you're actually doing.
Well, it's based on the Microsoft Graph. So the Graph is taking all these interactions and again, aggregating them, and then it's able to report on them. And I think, again, this is another tool that if you want to use it, it's probably going to provide you an idea of how you do spend your time. I mean, not everybody wants to necessarily know that, but I personally do have a number of these tools reporting to me on a regular basis, telling me how much time I spend in email and whatnot. So, I think it's a worthwhile tool. And again, if you get it free, I think it's worthwhile showing people and getting them, at least giving them the option to understand what's going on.
Yeah, it's not bad for free, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, what else can you see in there that is worthwhile letting everybody know this week?
Where should we go? You've got your Azure cheat sheet. Do you want to talk about that, Robert?
Yeah, so again, one of the biggest learnings is the fact that I find a lot of resellers tend to shy away from Azure and the opportunities there. They're very focused on email, then they're very focused on Microsoft 365. You don't see a lot of people who really are committing themselves to getting into Azure. And I think, again, many people think of Azure perhaps as purely infrastructure. So don't forget, Azure is also platform as a service, is also dev. Again, it's one of Microsoft's fastest growing products. So in a world of DevOps, where we're moving to more code for IT pros, is something that people should be having a look at. So the link that we'll put in the show notes here will give you some idea, again, of a quick way to understand what Azure is all about and, again, what it does, how it can help you, the benefits it does provide. A business, I would suggest it's worthwhile getting into. And again, if you aren't already looking at Azure, there are plenty of options. So Azure can do DNS, it can do backup, it can do virtual machines, it can do Azure AD, it can do a whole range of features here. So if you haven't gotten in it, there'll be a cheat sheet in this podcast, so you can have a look at it and get a bit of an idea. And my recommendation is that if you haven't jumped into Azure yet, now is probably a very good time to basically go and start doing that. So again, recommended you have a look. If not, like I said, let us know if you want some more deep dives in Azure. We can connect with people and get them to come on the show and speak about it more. So I think that pretty much covers everything that we've got for this week for people. Again, the show notes will be posted up as part of this blog, and the link's there so that you can go in and view those. But if people do have feedback or they do have information they would like to share with us, what's the best way for them to get in contact with us, Brenton?
The easiest way is to email us at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And if you want to find Robert and I on the Twitter, it's DirectorCIA, and contact Brenton. Need to Know Podcast on the Twitter is N2K Podcast, and on Facebook. What else do I need to say? Am I getting closer to actually knocking it out?
I think you're getting closer. I'm not quite 100%, but I think that's good. So it'll be enough. Make sure that you again tune in for our upcoming episodes. We thank everybody for being a regular listener. And again, make sure to let us know exactly what sort of content you want us to cover. Deep dive, what people you'd like to have on the show, and we'll make sure that we do our best to cover that. But I think that's probably enough for us in this episode to get people up to date with what happened at Microsoft Build. So again, it's thank you very much from me, and I suppose it's thank you very much from Brenton. Isn't it? Not done yet.
That's correct. I'll see you all next week. Yes.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.